Hey, welcome to Treasures Old and New from ART. Hi, I'm Joy Jackson. Another favorite of ours is Vic and Sade, and we have recorded quite a few. So this one is about three bulldogs and Uncle Fletcher's coming to stay. Now, Vic and Sade was a series from 1932 to 1945, always written by Paul Reimer. It was usually 15 minutes long and broadcast in the middle of the day, but it wasn't a soap opera. It was something different. Admittedly, it's an acquired taste, but we have fallen in love with the four people that are involved in Vic and Sade, and we plan to record a lot of them. Hope you like this one.
Well, sir, it's about the middle of the morning as we approach the small house halfway up in the next block now, and here on the back porch we find young Mr. Rushcook and his great-uncle Fletcher. The gentlemen are seated side by side on the top step but one, talking casually about this, that, and the other thing. Listen.
I like a collie myself.
Oh, I like a bulldog better.
Yes, a bulldog makes a good dog. It's like anything else. Some people like one thing, some like the other. I've always liked blunt-toed shoes. Well, I know fellas that like pointed-toed shoes.
Don't make much difference to me about my shoes.
You're like me with coffee.
Am I?
With coffee, I can take it with cream or without cream. With sugar or without sugar. Six of one, half a dozen of the other. I could name you off a dozen folk it makes plenty of difference to about whether they take cream and sugar in their coffee or not. But not me. Put sugar in my coffee or don't put sugar in my coffee. I'll drink it.
Uh-huh.
Been that way all my life.
Uh-huh. No, but about dogs, I think a bulldog's got more pep than a collie. A bulldog just as soon bites your leg off as look at you. What I'd like to have is a mean bulldog. Lead him around on a chain.
Rush!
Oh, hello, Mom.
Can I see you a minute?
Oh, sure.
Come on inside. You making out all right, Uncle Fletcher?
Fine, Sadie, fine. Wonderful day.
Yes, it is.
Looked like rain when I got up this morning.
Oh, did it?
Quite a few dark clouds in the west.
Uh-huh.
What you want, Mom?
Come on in the house a minute.
Yeah.
He'll be out again directly.
All right.
Let's go in the living room.
You want to talk to me about...
Garbage wagon in the alley, Sadie.
All right.
You want to talk to me about...
Morning, Gumpox. How are you this morning?
Oh, there he goes again.
Say, you were all wrong in that argument we had yesterday. I looked up the information in the encyclopedia... And it says,
Uncle Fletcher,
rutabagas had just as much nourishment any day in the week as parsnips.
Uncle Fletcher?
Yes, Sadie?
Would you mind not yelling, please?
Railroad engineer next door still asleep?
Yes, I believe he is.
I'm sorry.
Second time today I've told him about yelling. He don't remember stuff a minute. Mr. Donahue got in off a St. Louis freight drag at 9 o'clock, and he's trying to get some rest. Simply dead tired.
Who'd Uncle Fletcher yell to before?
Oh, the mailman. Yelled to him from his bedroom window. Pretty warm day to be tromping around with that big bag of letters, ain't it? I'll bet your job's pretty hard on shoe leather. Top of his lungs, he hollered. Goodness.
What'd you want to talk to me about, Mom?
Uncle Fletcher, he's got to be spoken to. And I think you're the one to do it.
Aww.
Yes, I do.
But I can't bawl out Uncle Fletcher.
It's not a matter of bawling out anyone. But you kind of halfway suggest stuff.
I should think you
when
would.
When I make any remarks to him that sounds anything like I'm criticizing, he shuts right up tight and acts like he's been injured. You can drop little hints and insinuations, and he'll never notice. for instance, you can say to
Sadie,
him...
Sadie, Brickmush Man!
Oh, my!
Oh, heck, Mom, he don't mean anything.
Of course he don't mean anything. Only thing is, I'm saying is...
Sadie, Brickmush Man!
I'll bet Mr. Donahue over next door in bed is fit to be tied.
How we fix for Brickmush, Sadie? The Brickmush Man's out here.
We got plenty Brickmush on hand, Uncle Fletcher.
What?
Tell the Brickmush Man not to bother leaving any Brickmush. We got all the Brickmush we could possibly...
What?
You yell.
I didn't catch what you said, Sadie.
We got enough Brickmush, Uncle Fletcher.
Got enough Brickmush?
Yeah.
Okay.
Why does he yell when I tell him not to yell?
He forgets.
He's got to be spoken to. And not only just about yelling to people, either. He's got to be told to leave things alone. He put my front doorbell on the blink this morning.
Did he?
Yes, he said it didn't ring loud enough, and he went and got tools from the basement, and he disconnected wires and screwed out screws and everything else. Now the darn bell won't let out a peep. It's not funny.
No, I know it's not, only...
Also, he nailed himself to a kitchen chair.
Yeah?
He said one of the legs was coming loose, and he got a hammer and nail, and he started to pound away. He was sitting on the chair while he pounded. Tried to get up and couldn't. He'd hammered nails right through his pants.
Shucks.
Did you see the address business he made for the front porch?
Was that what he was whittling on after breakfast this morning?
Yes. He whittled this enormous big board. It's as big as a sign. Then he printed numbers on it and stuck it out on the front porch up above the mailbox.
Is it there now?
Yeah.
Well, I guess I'll go take a look at it.
You can go look at it later.
Number plate for the house, huh?
Yes. Only printed the wrong number.
Yeah?
No more our address than a rabbit. He's got a 7 where there's supposed to be a 4, and a 0 where there's supposed to be an 8.
Oh, by George, Mom, Uncle Fletcher is the darndest.
I'll say. I wonder what Mr. Donahue thought of that pounding. Uncle Fletcher pounded the kitchen chair and then pounded his number plate. Person could hear the commotion a mile away. He's got to be spoken to.
I don't think I better.
I do. You can drop little hints and insinuations. If I say anything, he thinks he's being criticized and tightens right up. Why don't you just kind of buttonhole him and...
You people in the living room?
Hello.
Sun's getting pretty hot outside.
Yeah.
I can't stand hot sunshine like I used to could. Didn't want any Brickmush, eh, Sadie?
Got more on hand now than we can use.
I told the fella you had plenty.
Uh-huh.
Seems like a nice, sociable fella.
Yes.
Am I interrupting something here?
Oh, not at all. Sit down.
No, thanks. On my way upstairs.
To lay down a little while?
Oh, no.
Getting up at 5 o'clock the way you do, I wouldn't blame you for feeling tired.
No, I'm not tired. Just going to my room and write a letter.
Write it here on the library table, pen and ink in the drawer and stuff.
Believe I'd rather go to my room and write with a pencil.
All right.
Don't care much for pen and ink. When I write, I generally chew on the pencil point while I'm thinking. Fella chews on a pen and ink, and he gets ink all over his face and necktie.
Uh-huh.
So if you'll excuse me, I'll just stroll on upstairs.
Anything you like.
Gonna drop a line to my landlady in Dixon, Mrs. Keller.
Uh-huh.
Tell her I'm feeling well and having a good time and so on.
Sure.
Ask her to send me on my rocking chair.
Rocking chair?
I hope you won't think that's a slam on your chairs. Matter of fact, it helps me feel at home if I got my own rocking chair to sit in. Huh. I wake up in the morning, and if I see my own rocking chair there by the bed, I'm easy and comfortable. I'd feel at home in Africa if I had my own rocking chair along.
Uh-huh.
You don't mind if I have Miss Keller send me on my rocking chair?
Oh, no, no, of course not.
Well, I'll go on up and write my letter.
All right.
Need me for anything, want anything fixed, you know, just holler.
All right.
I like to make myself useful whether I'm company or not.
Uh-huh.
Sadie?
Yes?
I say if you need me for anything, want anything fixed, just holler.
All right.
I like to make myself useful whether I'm company or not.
All right. Oh, he's sending for furniture?
Just a rocking chair is all.
A rocking chair is furniture. How long's he intend to stay, do you suppose?
No.
Goodness, if he sends for his rocking chair, next thing he's liable to send for is his dresser, his bed, his trunk.
Mom, I like Uncle Fletcher around.
Oh, sure. Person likes him around and all, but it's so wearing on a person. You take this morning. All that yelling with Mr. Donahue trying to get some sleep next door. The monstrous signboard he whittled out for the front porch with our wrong address on it. Nailed himself to a kitchen chair, putting my bell on the blink. Oh.
Yeah, but still.
It's that getting up at 5 o'clock in the morning that really beats me. And he's talking to himself. Well, I can't sleep myself after 5 o'clock worrying about what he's up to. He might paint the house. He might crawl up on the roof and try to shingle it and fall off and break his neck. And now he's sending for his furniture. How long's he planned to stay? Why, heavens alive, he might even decide to stay.
How are you this morning?
Oh, my.
Heck, Mom, he's got a right to.
Listen.
Can't kick thanks. Feeling fine.
He's hollering out the window.
Uh-huh.
Glorious day, glorious day.
Hollering out the Donahue side of the house.
Yeah.
We've had a beautiful summer in Dixon. Not too hot, not too cold. Thermometer hung around 70 degrees all during June, July, and August.
Go up and talk to him, Rush.
Okay.
Go up and talk to him.
Which concludes another brief interlude at the small house halfway up in the next block. You've been listening to a recreation of Vic and Sade by the American Radio Theater. In our cast, you heard Marge Lutton as Sade, Joy Jackson as Rush, and Kim Turner as Uncle Fletcher. Live sound effects by Marilyn Wilt. I'm Tom Probst. This is ART, the American Radio Theater.
Here's another Vic and Sade. This one is about Sadie's Gross of Gravels.
It's early evening as we approach the small house halfway up in the next block, and here on the front porch we find Mr. and Mrs. Victor Gook and their son, Mr. Rush Gook. Vic and Sade are seated in the swing, and young Rush is perched on the railing facing them. Listen.
What's the situation we have to cope with?
Situation?
Oh, you certainly can't have forgotten. You said at the supper table we had a situation to cope with, and it was so important you couldn't discuss it while we ate. Must be some life or death crisis if it slipped your mind already.
Oh, yeah. It did slip my mind.
You noticed the house is on fire and you plan to do something about it later on?
Rush, you gonna stick around?
Wish to discuss something of a private nature, do you?
Oh, I guess it's not so horrible, private.
Well, why don't I go down to the basement or out in the alley or someplace else if you people want to engage in a confidential chat?
Oh, I guess you can sit still, I guess, but it's grown-up secrets we're talking about, so don't be telling tales out of school.
Mom's the word.
Yeah.
Whip out the situation. I want to cope with it.
Well, Ruthie's upset.
Oh, that a fact?
Yes.
You people are skulking around talking about individuals being upset. Puts me in mind of Smelly Clark's Uncle Strap and his lady friend the time that they went off to Peoria for the purposes of eating a fish dinner.
You can stay here, Rush, if you want. But you'll just have to sit still and listen.
Oh, you prefer I didn't participate in the conversation?
Not till I get through telling what I gotta tell.
At least. Fine.
Ruthie's troubled, Vic, over... I guess you'll think this is silly.
Very likely. What's Ruthie troubled over?
The Christmas present Fred's making for me.
Oh?
Every single day seems like there's a new situation to cope with.
Oh, that's life.
A person never can go around without anything on their mind.
That's life.
I like salted peanuts.
That's life.
Yeah, yes, isn't it? Now, why don't you put on your cap and pull it down over your ears?
Oh, you caught me in a trap that time.
Uh-huh. Ruthie's troubled. Ruthie's troubled over the Christmas present Fred's making for you. What is that Christmas present?
A gross of gravel.
Come over that again, Lum.
Fred Stembottom is making me a gross of gravels. 12 dozen of them.
You mean those little hammers that you pound on the table when you conduct the Thimble Club meetings?
Mm-hmm. Yes, a gross of them. 144 gravels.
The word is gavels, Mom.
You know that heap of wood he got from some cabinet maker chum of his here in town?
Uh-huh.
It's odds and ends of wood he got from some cabinet maker chum of his here in town.
Oh, Harry McWilliams. I know him. He got a shop somewhere over in the west side.
Yeah. Well, Fred has this brilliant idea. See? I'll whittle out Sadie a whole big bunch of gravels to conduct her Thimble Club meetings with. Here's this monstrous heap of elegant scrap lumber at my disposal. I'll whittle out a gross of gravels and put them in a fancy box and give them to Sadie for Christmas.
I think that's a very pretty thought.
Well, yes. Sweet of them and all, but goodness, what do I want with 144 gravels?
Mom, the word is gavel.
Hmm?
It's gavels.
What's gravels?
I mean, the word is gravels. I mean gavels.
What's he talking about, Vic?
He's trying to correct a mistake that you've been making for a good many years. The little hammers that we've been discussing are gravels rather than gavels. The word is spelled...
Gavels rather than gravels, Govs. Now you're twisted.
I said gravels rather than gavels.
Oh, well, for mercy's sake, what is this?
Gov had a slip of the tongue.
Maybe you'd better go someplace else.
Oh...
Shall I make another stab at this?
Go ahead.
No, Fred got this bright idea, see? I'll whittle out Sadie a whole gross of gravels and give them to her for Christmas. He was proud as a horse at his brilliant idea. So original, don't you know?
That's original, all right.
He boasted to Ruthie. He said, I'll bet nobody else in the world ever gave anybody 144 gravels for Christmas before.
He's probably right.
I wouldn't be surprised.
Well, what's Ruthie's beef?
Well, how do you mean?
What's Ruthie kicking about?
Well, the senselessness of
it.
Imagine a gross of gravels, 12 dozen gravels, 144 gravels.
Gavels.
Rush, what on earth has eaten you tonight?
Well, I'd like to clear up one little point, and then I'll keep absolutely quiet.
You want to tell a story about Smelly Clark's Uncle Strap eating fish with his girl in Peoria?
No, I want to put you straight on a matter.
Vic, maybe I better tell you about this some other time. Next Tuesday, say.
Uh-huh.
This will only take 6 minutes. 6 seconds.
Oh, all right.
If you'll consult the dictionary, you'll discover...
You consult the dictionary.
The word gravel means little rocks and stones.
Thanks, you finished?
The word gavel, spelled G-A-V-E-L, means the little hammer that you use when you conduct the Thimble Club meetings.
Now are you finished?
Yes.
Well... I'll try again, Vic.
Okay.
144 gravels is senseless. One gravel will last a person a whole lifetime.
I give up.
You've been warned, Rush.
I give you my solemn word, I won't say another word.
Fine. I'll take my fancy gravel all carved with cues and trash the Thimble Club ladies that gave me when I was made the president. And now that gravel will last forever. Gravels don't wear out. If Fred whittles me out 144 gravels, it just means I got 144 gravels to find space for. And in this house, cluttered up with rubbish the way it is already.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what bothers Ruthie. She appreciates how cramped we are for room. Well, I'll bet 144 gravels would require a box as big as Rush's dresser.
Uh-huh.
Oh, ish.
Well, why don't Ruthie tell Fred that?
Oh, she did. But he's so fond of his brilliant idea, he won't listen to her. And then, of course, he's obstinate. Once he gets a notion, he sticks to it. And besides, he enjoys whittling out them gravels. Ruthie says he's got 9 or 10 finished already.
Aha! Uh-huh. He's only got 134 to go.
144 gravels.
Oh, my.
What you meaning about, Miss Dwyer?
Oh, nothing.
Gravels don't wear out.
Well, have you a plan for coping with the situation?
Yes.
I bet it involves
Oh, it
me.
Does. Oh, it yeah. does involve you.
Okay. I will solve the great gravel problem.
Now you're saying it, Gov.
Huh?
You're saying gravel now.
Why not? No sense in beating my head against a stone wall.
What's this?
Nothing. You want me to go? How do you want me to go about solving this great gravel problem?
Speak to Fred.
You said you'd spoken to him.
Yes, by Ruthie, but not by you.
Shall I say, Fred, you scoundrel, if you give my wife any half-wit gravels for Christmas, I'll break your skull.
No. Me and Ruthie thought to work it out like this. Now, they're coming here tomorrow to play 500.
Uh-huh.
Tomorrow night, you know?
Uh-huh.
Well, we do like we generally do. They come on the porch here, and then me and Ruthie will go upstairs to fix our face, leaving you and Fred alone to chat a little bit. There's your chance.
I'll grab them firmly by the shoulders, and I'll
say... Hey, Gov, put them through that ceremony it tells about in Volume 7 of your large
Which
library.
Which ceremony is that, Wilhelmia?
Well, you know, where you break his walking stick over your knee and rip the buttons off of his coat, vest, and shirt and underwear and slap his face and make him...
I am not inclined to joke about matters pertaining to my lodge, Rush.
Oh.
I must counsel you to seek other fields for your wicked humor.
I'm not getting along with anybody tonight.
We thought, Ruthie and me, that you could get at Fred from this angle.
Uh-huh.
Bring up the subject of gravels easy and casual. Might be a good idea to leave my gravel laying here in the wing.
Yeah.
You and Fred sit down and you pick up the gravel and you twirl it around in your fingers, maybe.
Mm-hmm. This gravel belongs to my wife, Fred. Handsome, isn't it?
Yes.
It's a very substantial gravel, Fred. Lasts a lifetime.
That's it.
She's got two others upstairs.
Oh, wonderful. And that'd be the truth, too.
You have got two other gravels upstairs?
Well, I got those two little wooden tomahawks tied together with ribbon that say, Compliments of Indian Hill, Wisconsin, on them. They could be used for gravels. Matter of fact, I did use one of them for gravel once.
Well, dandy.
And you can kind of get across to Fred how absolutely useless more than one gravel is. Fred, you say, a person has about as much an extra gravel as they have for an extra elbow or an extra knee.
Oh, that's laying it on pretty thick. Won't he suspect somebody's put a bug in my ear?
Well, all right. Let him suspect it. At least you'd be getting it across how we feel about 144 gravels in the house.
Well,
very likely the idea will occur to him, Ruthie whispered the story to us. But he'll realize he don't want any 144 gravels, and he'll quit whittling on out 144 gravels.
He might turn on Ruthie in a mighty rage.
No.
No?
No.
Okay.
No. 144 gravels?
Not gravels, Mom. It's gavels.
Huh?
The word is gavels.
Gravels, uh-huh.
No, gavels.
Yeah. gravels.
Oh, my.
Give up, Marcus.
Oh, my.
144 gravels. Think of it. 144 gravels.
Which concludes another visit to the small house halfway up in the next block.
My last Vic and Sade is Please Pass the Gravy, and it's all about Uncle Fletcher and his people.
Please Pass the Gravy, originally broadcast on May 26, 1944. Well, sir, quiet Virginia Avenue is radiant with sunshine as we approach the small house halfway up in the next block now, and we find Mrs. Victor Gook on the front porch swinging gently in the swing. Mrs. Gook has taken a respite from her domestic duties to read a postcard just lately delivered by the mailman. And at this moment, a familiar voice is heard. Listen.
Good morning, Sadie, honey.
Oh, hello. Uncle Fletcher, how are you?
Glorious day.
Oh, isn't it? Come on up and sit down.
That's right. No, I figured you was out here on the front porch. I happened to be out in the alley and accidentally noticed some woman or other cross the street waving and hollering in this direction.
Mm-hmm. That was Mrs. McChilzer.
I surely put two and two together and ciphered out the fact that she must be wavering and hollering at you.
Yes, she was. Now, sit down.
Railing's all right.
No, you could easily tumble off backwards and fall on the hard ground and get hurt. Sit down beside me here on the swing.
I can't stay but a minute.
Oh, sure you can. Sit down.
I only stopped past to ask a question. Soon as I've asked my question, I have to saunter on down to the interurban station.
Well, ask away. I'm just delighted to have an excuse to sit out here in the sunshine. I'm straightening around the trash on the attic stair steps this morning, and it's so close and sticky up there.
Fine.
I'll say fine. Oh, ish. I don't know why I pick a warm day like this to straighten around trash on the attic stair steps anyway. Just haven't got any better sense, I guess.
That's right.
Yeah. Well, what's the question?
Rick hasn't got back from his trip yet, are they?
Oh, no. He gets back tomorrow, just as he planned. Train arrives at 4:57 in the afternoon.
I see.
Was there something important, Uncle Fletcher?
Yes.
Uh-huh.
I thought it was just possible that if Vic had returned, he might be able to advise my friend Pelter Unblee to cross the alley on a certain matter.
Oh, I'm sure he'd be happy to, if he was here.
Pelter Unblee is very much upset this morning, Sadie, honey.
Is he?
Very much upset. Very much upset.
Now, I saw Pelter Unbleat this morning when I was doing my breakfast dishes. Happened to glance out my kitchen window and noticed him sitting in the alley on top of Ms. Harris's garbage box.
He's still sitting there.
No.
He's still sitting there.
Must have been 3 hours ago when I noticed him.
He might have been sitting there 4 hours before you noticed him. Pelter Unbleat is upset, I tell you.
He failed to remove the odor from hyena grease.
What?
Is he upset because he failed to remove the odor from hyena grease? Now, you were telling me the other day that
Hasn't got anything to do with hyena grease.
I'm only asking is all. The other day, you were saying he was all excited because he was confident he could remove the odor from hyena grease and be rich and famous. And
this hasn't got anything to, hasn't got nothing to do with hyena grease. This hasn't got nothing to do with hyena grease.
Well, all right, elegant. Ish on hyena grease.
No, Sadie, honey. My only thought was this. I thought it might be just possible that Vic returned from his trip today. In that case, I wanted to ask his advice in connection to with Pelter Unblee.
You can ask him tomorrow.
Uh-huh. Yes.
The summertime sure has sneaked up on us. Goodness. This might be the middle of August. Doesn't seem but yesterday we were bundled up in mufflers and galoshes, getting ready to plow through the snow. Time slips past so fast, it's enough to scare a person. How's Miss Keller feeling, Uncle Fletcher?
Who's this?
Your landlady?
That's Miss Keller.
I know it is. I asked how's she feeling.
All right, I guess. She don't say a great deal, Miss Keller don't. Eats three hearty meals a day and leaves it go at that. No, she'll pretty much keep her trap shut, Miss Keller will. I don't comment.
Well, that's nice.
Yes, tis.
Russell made me laugh at the breakfast table this morning. He was telling about some kid over at Tateman's vacant lot, and they were
Russell up at school, are they?
Oh, sure. It's a weekday. No, he was telling me about some kid that...
I didn't know but what he was just inside the door within earshot of our conversation.
Oh, goodness, no. If there wasn't any school and he was home, you wouldn't catch him in any hot old house, not in this kind of weather.
I didn't know but what he wasn't skulking just inside the door within earshot of our conversation.
He's in school, all right?
Because I've been turning over in my head the idea of confiding in you, Sadie, honey, Pelder Unbleached Trouble.
I wish you would.
He's very much upset.
Yes, you told me. Gee, though, I don't know as I'd be able to offer much smart advice.
No, you wouldn't, Sadie, honey.
Hmm.
When did you say you seen Pelder Unbleat out in the alley sitting on top of Miss Harris's garbage box?
Well, when I was doing my breakfast dishes. That was at least 3 hours ago.
He's been sitting there ever since.
Well, of course, it's not a bad place to soak up sunshine. I should think the concrete would feel hard after a while, though, and I'd expect numerous flies are buzzing round and...
Matters are approaching a climax over at Miss Harris's house these days, Sadie, honey.
Oh?
The tension is so stout you could cut it with a knife. There's so much electricity in the air you can hear it cackle.
Well, we'll tell.
Very likely, Sadie, honey. You have grasped some clue, hint, or inkling as to the nature of this matter.
Oh, sure I have. The big lawsuit?
What lawsuit is this?
Miss Harris taking Pelder Unbleat to court for being in arrears on his room rent.
You're right out ahead there, leading the potato race, eh?
Well, ish. I'm not quite a nitwit, I hope.
You're all right, Sadie. You've got a useful little skull on your shoulders. I won't hide the fact you hit the nail on the head. Yes, Pelder Unbleat is upset over this lawsuit matter. And like I say, things is approaching a climax over across the alley there. The tension is so stout you can cut it up with a knife. There's so much electricity in the air you can hear it cackle.
Well, tell. Why is Pelder Unbleat spending all day sitting on the garbage box? Is Miss Harris going ahead with the lawsuit?
Sadie, honey, this morning at the breakfast table, Miss Harris ignored Pelder Unbleat's request to pass him the gravy.
Ignored his request to pass him the gravy, huh?
Pelder Unbleat says, pass me the gravy, please. Miss Harris vouchsafed no reply. Pelder Unbleat tried again. He spoke louder. Pass the gravy, please, he says. Still no answer. I call that coming out in the open, don't you? Miss Harris is showing her fangs. Her refusal to pass Pelder Unbleat the gravy was the same as a declaration of battle.
Does Pelder Unbleat take his meals at Miss Harris?
Sure.
I never knew that.
He always has taken his meals there.
He continues to room there and take his meals there, even though he knows Miss Harris plans to sue him?
Yes.
Has he paid anything yet?
What?
Has he paid her any money since she threatened him with the lawsuit?
No.
He hasn't?
Of course not. With Pelder Unbleat, it's the principle of the thing.
Several weeks ago, Miss Harris threatened to sue Pelder Unbleat for arrears in his rent. Are you telling me that Pelder Unbleat has gone right ahead rooming at Miss Harris's house and eaten her meals and still hasn't paid anything?
With Pelder Unbleat, it's the principle of the thing. With Powder Unbleed, it's the principle of
the
thing.
I know that, but
When he buys something or orders something or contracts for something, he pays a little cash on account. He enjoys owing the rest. That's always been his habit. But Miss Harris wants her money right now. She wants to be paid in full.
When Pelter Unbleat arranged for lodging at Miss Harris's house a month and a half ago, or whenever it was, he paid a little something down, huh?
Of course, of course.
And he hasn't paid a red cent since, huh?
He would scorn the idea.
And all this time since then, even though he knew Miss Harris planned to sue him, he went right ahead using her room and eating her meals, huh?
Naturally, naturally.
Well, I'll be switched.
I'll agree with you. The atmosphere over there has been chilly. Like I say, the tension is
so stout you can cut it with a knife.
Sure.
There's so much electricity in the air you can hear
it cackle.
Uh-huh.
See, neither one of them wants to give in.
Looks to me like Miss Harris is giving in.
Why?
Continuing to serve meals to a deadbeat that not only refuses to pay what he owes, but even gets nasty and stubborn and hostile.
You've got reference to Pelter Unbleat when you say deadbeat, are they?
I don't know what else he is.
I believe you used the words nasty and stubborn in connection with Pelter Unbleat.
Yes, I did.
Who was nasty and stubborn when they refused to pass the gravy?
Miss Harris, I suppose.
Sure, Miss Harris.
Why should she pass any gravy? Why should she even allow him to sit down in her kitchen?
The women stick together, I see.
It's not a matter of sticking together. It's a matter of common sense. What right has your friend Pelter Unbleat to expect gravy if he refuses to pay his landlady the money?
He asked for the gravy in a nice, polite way. He told me so out in the alley by the garbage box not 15 minutes ago. Pass the gravy, please, he says. Miss Harris ignored him. He spoke louder, but still polite. Pass the gravy, please, he says. Miss Harris sat like a statue.
Oh, ish, Uncle Fletcher. This isn't anything for you and I to argue about.
Miss Harris had showed her fangs. She indicated she'd come out in the open.
You and I don't care.
In refusing to pass Pelter Unbleat the gravy at the breakfast table this morning, Landlady Harris was just the same as making a declaration of war.
Oh, we should worry.
Sadie, honey, Pelter Unbleat told me another thing when I was talking to him out in the alley a little while ago.
And what was that?
He's almost decided to change rooming houses.
Oh, really?
He's playing with the notion of picking up his belongings and moving to other lodgings.
Oh, goodness.
How would Landlady Harris like that?
Lands.
He might do it. He might do it. Pelter Unbleat is just reckless enough and upset enough to leave Miss Harris in the lurch and seek accommodations at some other establishment.
Oh, gracious.
Sadie, honey, perhaps I shouldn't be agitating you with the frightful and horrifying details of this awful mess.
Let's do talk about something else.
I hope you don't have any nightmares this evening when you go to bed.
I'll forget all the terrible particulars you give me. I'll just push Pelter Unbleat and Landlady Harris right out of my head.
Do that, Sadie, honey. Do that.
All right. Did you ever see such a bright, sunny morning?
Glorious day. Glorious day.
Which brings us to the conclusion of another episode at the Small House halfway up in the next block.
Hey, let's listen to some music from the days of old-time radio, and here is Jubilee.
I found a new baby.
Thank you.
Well, stand me, but don't bend me. If that wasn't a lolly mess of spots scattered together for the come on. And Mr. C, you can stick around to lather up this next little ditty. We're about to drop the way of all jubilees. We have a little beauty to introduce this spot, so let's get out the hand clappers for a lovely dream, Jenny Jackson.
He comes around and hangs the moon up every evening and sprinkles stardust as we go by. He's the man who paints the rainbow in the sky. He must have blessed the falling star that I just wished on, 'cause when I kissed you, he winked his eye. He's the man who paints the rainbow.
Make us know blues in B flat. my old Jubilee is blue as the sea and twice as rocky tonight. And that means we have to give forth with a change of pace, with a foursome called the Milltones. Let's bring them on with a typical hello. The Milltones. Here we go on a rundown of the old spiritual called Jericho. Yes, indeed, and thank you very much, boys. That made the steam melt in this beloved boiler of Barrel House and Bounce. Comes time now when we shuffle our big stack of musicians on the Jubilee stage, make preparation for the triumphant return of Opie Chase and the orchestra. In the absence of fanfare, we'll ask the pianist to hit the A note so the boys can tune up. Thank you. Now that we're all in tune... Okay, let's not give Opie a minute's peace up here. We're putting to work on a tune that's been making the high spots for some time now. With Opie's clarinet sparking the crew, let's take a dig into Don't Be That Way. Thank you. Oh, thank you, Opie. That was the orchestra with something that rounded the first turn into the back stretch with a mellow canter. Which makes it about time to bring up a new voice to old Jubilee. He's down from San Francisco, where he did a shift on Old Fisherman's Wharf at Joe DiMaggio's Cafe, sending the smooth notes out and away. Let's say hello to Rodney Gutman.
That's all the time I've got for today. Please stop by our website, AmericanRadioTheater.org, to catch up on some more of our podcasts. We put up a new one every month. See you next time. Bye.